Good afternoon, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Clean Energy View radio show. The Clean Energy View is a special series produced by the Organic View Radio Network, which focuses on the world of clean energy. Our podcasts are available on iTunes, Zune, and every major podcast provider, or you can visit our website at www.theorganicview.com. If you have any questions or would like to contact the show about sponsorship opportunities, please email us at info@theorganicview.com. You can also post a message on our wall on Facebook or send me a tweet at June Stoyer on Twitter. Today's show is brought to you by LiquidWeb.com, the most reliable hosting provider with 24/7 heroic support. Please visit www.liquidweb.com and make sure you tell them that you heard about them on the Organic View Radio Network.
Today my guest is Scott Davis, and we're going to be talking about his best-selling book, Sirius Microhydro. Water power is the largest source of renewable energy in the world today, and microhydro is a mature, proven technology that can provide clean, inexpensive, renewable energy with little or no impact on the environment. And it's just amazing how much information is out there about renewable energy, but especially with the microhydro. I mean, it's just absolutely amazing when you look at all the different stories and all the different lessons that there are to learn, especially from what other people have been doing. And in this book, it's almost like an anthology of different stories that Mr. Davis has put together. And I, for some of you that are completely new to the game, you'll find that it's just chock-filled with information. And for others, you'll find that you will laugh at some of the examples that Mr. Davis gives, because it's just such a well-written book and written straight from the heart. So I would like to welcome to the show Mr. Scott Davis. Good afternoon, Mr. Davis.
Well, good afternoon.
It is a pleasure having you on the show. Can you tell our audience about yourself and also about your charity?
My name is Scott Davis, and in regards to the energy business, I would say there's been sort of like three phases in my life. The first phase, I was a user of renewable energy. I dropped out of graduate school in 1976 or something like that to work on a village-scale hydroelectric system in a remote area west of Lillooet, B.C.
Mm-hmm.
And in the years that followed, I fooled around with microhydro. I used it, repaired, designed systems, and so on. And so eventually I started a company, Yalakam Appropriate Technology, which was an award-winning renewable energy development company, to share my skills with others. The thing about microhydro is that while there's lots of information available for like solar and wind power, we just couldn't find high-quality information that told us exactly what we needed to know, even though we had an engineer for our project and so on. So I did end up writing this book, kind of a how-to-do-it book called Microhydro Clean Power from Water.
Mm.
After many years as a project developer, I found that the technology was quite mature. It was sort of easy to sell and maintain and so on. You didn't have to do any original research or anything. But what I discovered was that there weren't really adequate incentives for to actually make the sales of renewable energy a viable proposition. So we founded, my wife and I founded Friends of Renewable Energy BC to lobby for better and more effective incentives, because of course you can't sell equipment if no one wants to buy it. So that's
very
the
true.
Phases.
Now let me ask you a question. When it comes to renewable energy, when you're working with people that really don't know where to begin, what is the biggest lesson that they initially learn when they start to explore the different options?
Well, that is sort of refers to the second phase in my life, because answering that question is why I gathered together the Sirius Microhydro anthology. Most people need to get some kind of background in the energy situation before, you know, in order to be an informed consumer. The thing is that living with grid electricity doesn't necessarily prepare you for generating your own power from renewable energy. There's lots to learn. Like one of the things you have to learn is that there's a lot of energy out there, and really more than energy per se, it's really affording, you know, what the most affording energy that's the real problem, not any like lack of it or anything like that. People who get the electricity from a grid probably use 2, 3, 4 times as much electricity as they really need. Like, we have a waste problem.
I think we have a huge waste problem.
Yeah, and it's interesting when people start to pay for their power, on a standalone basis or something like that, suddenly conservation becomes a matter of pride and not an irritation. So I would say that one of the main first lessons you have to teach people is how possible it is to use less and still maintain a high standard of living.
Well, do you think it's also the fact that here in North America, we have a tendency to have so much at our disposal that it's almost as if we don't respect the generosity and the abundance that we're blessed with?
Well, there's abundance, but there's abundance everywhere. The third phase in my life, the Friends of Renewable Energy, BC, one of our slogans is market solutions for environmental problems. So whenever you come across a problem, I usually say things like, oh, you're not paying the right price for things. So more than an abundance, because, of course, the whole world is drenched in solar, in energy from the sun, horsepower per square yard on a sunny day, and there's lots and lots of wind power, and there are many micro-hydro sites, although it's more site-specific. The real problem is that today we're not really paying the full cost of our energy usage. People die mining coal all the time, and yet coal is really cheap. They call it externalizing when you just don't count the environmental cost.
Not to mention the fact that with farming, for example, in agriculture, as great as it is to have organic farms all over, people tend to forget that these farms are still using fossil fuels to power the tractors and the other farm equipment, not to mention the fact that, you know, there's no black and white solution. There's no one-size-fits-all solution. I think it's a collective effort where we need to not only assess what we're doing, but also do our part to conserve as much as possible. And I think conservation is a very big issue that most people just don't really quite comprehend. They, you know, maybe they'll turn off a light in a room that they're not in, but there's so much waste that's being generated. And you actually have a little rule of thumb when it comes to the amount of energy. Can you just briefly talk about that?
Yes, well, I used to sell off-grid power systems, standalone power systems, over the phone a lot. So I had to develop many little rules of thumb to kind of, you know, bring people along. And again, that's why I use the anthology, because it's a lot better to use an example of someone less rather than, say, an equation or something like that. Someone told Stephen Hawking that every equation in his book would cut the sales in half. So I try not to delve too much into the techie gore of this number and that number, but when we're designing systems, we say that 1 or 200 kilowatt hours a month can provide a high standard of living with proper energy efficient technologies. Now, considering that the average consumption of electricity in Canada is about 900 kilowatts, maybe four or more times as much as you actually need, kind of explains the magnitude of the waste and conservation potential. So one of the first things that you have to teach people is that they don't really need a system that's big enough to give them what they use in town, that actually with better appliances they can use a lot less and still have a high standard of living. So that was my rule of thumb, 100 or 200 kilowatt hours a month. And Sirius Micro Hydro is full of examples of people who are running homes and businesses from approximately that amount of energy.
Now, with your work, what have you found to be some of the biggest myths about micro hydro as well as renewable energy?
Well, there. The thing about energy is it's a confused topic, but it's being professionally confused by the fossil fuel industry and so on. So there are a lot of urban myths that circulate about renewable energy and micro hydro in particular. One of the main problems, one of the main myths, probably, is that there somehow isn't very much renewable energy available. And what can I say? There is. There's lots of wind potential. Many times various Harvard studies have shown that there's many times the present consumption rate of wind potential available in the U.S., for example. I think scarcity is probably one of the, in general, kind of covers many of the myths that you have to dispel. There's lots of energy. The problem really is doing a financially responsible job of capturing it. It's not like there's somehow a shortage or something.
When it comes to the actual cost, especially with the low prices of energy, how do these low prices subsidize the waste?
Oh, well, it's just a lot of people get salaries for their get their money through salaries, and that doesn't necessarily acquaint you with how wealth is actually produced. But in the case of low energy prices, and I had to come to this conclusion, from listening to my customers for many years. They said that they couldn't afford this and they couldn't afford that because the payback was so long. And it seems an odd thing to me to be able to not afford free fuel forever. And so I just couldn't quite understand how it was so. And what it is that because you're not paying the full cost for your utility power, other forms of energy seem actually very expensive. However, if you were paying the full cost, cleaning up the mess afterwards, dealing with social disruptions of, say, coal mining or whatever, if you're paying the full cost, then renewable energy would be quite a bargain. Wherever the grids don't go in the off-grid area, renewable energy competes quite nicely with fossil fuels.
Interesting. Now, when it comes to just working with the utility companies, that can be quite a challenge. And in one chapter, you go into detail about kind of the hurdles that you had to overcome in order to basically find out, okay, well, what are you entitled to and who do you have to speak to in order to find out, do you get paid in credits or in currency? So can you talk about what you would recommend to people that are trying to, I guess, sell back the excess energy and how they can best go about receiving payment in money?
Well, again, probably the best thing to do is conservation, because you can get the same payback by, through the megawatts concept, by watts you don't use, as selling it back. Like, if you use better appliances, a better fridge and things like that, that's actually the first and foremost best way to make money out of it. Now, as far as selling your power back to the grid, in theory, it's a really excellent idea. There are many advantages to doing that, and it's just a matter of jurisdiction by jurisdiction finding a deal that's reasonable. Now, the thing is, we have a lot of happy talk on the energy business because we're failing to do anything really significant. And so it can be a very confusing. You can get programs that don't offer a reasonable return on investment. That's definitely true. You know?
It's kind of interesting that you write about how in the beginning you and your wife made the decision to invest in efficient technologies instead of doing what everybody else does. So can you share some of the things that you've learned in order for other people that are listening to this show today, what they can do to make more of an informed choice when it comes to renewable energy?
Well, the off-grid areas offer great example and leadership to us, really, in a certain way. That's why the anthology turned out to be important. You just see that many people just do a lot better for less. Now, one of the things that you might do is not look at what your neighbors are doing, but look farther afield, say to European examples or something like this, because, of course, your neighbors are caught up in the same disastrous situation that that got us into this trouble in the first place. So doing what your neighbors do, even though it's a time-honored strategy and so on, may not actually work with renewable energy, really.
So where can you look as far as to find sound advice from people that have made some pretty interesting choices but have learned greatly from it so that you don't wind up necessarily making a mistake that you don't have to? I think that's one of the biggest problems when it comes to any technology, and I love how you write about the fact that you're not a big fan of using brand new technology, which is something that a lot of people tend to do. They see something that's brand new and they tend to jump all over it without giving it a chance to, you know, get out there and get some feedback to see, okay, well, are there any bugs with this? Are there any issues? Do we need to wait for a new release? You know, what is the case? And you know, it's very common across the board, regardless of what the technology is.
Yeah, that's right. You know, you just could, innovation would die without early adopters, you know. I just love them. But it's so easy to make a mistake, with untried technology.
Mm.
The nice thing about renewable energy is that you don't need new technology. You don't have to wait for a better solar panel, get a better light bulb. The water power technology, there have been a few changes in the past few decades, but it's been a mature technology for many years. That is the sad part, and I want to emphasize the good news about renewable energy, but I will complain for a short time here. That is the sad thing about renewable energy, is that mostly the technologies are mature, and it's not really a question of new technology so much as appropriate design.
That's a really great point. Appropriate design.
Yeah, see, that really, rather than worrying about, say, which is the best solar panel to get and so on, you have a much more difficult problem, really, which is choosing your dealer, your installer, your designer, because that's actually where the cleverness has to come from.
Why from the dealer?
Pardon?
Why from the installer, rather?
Well, installer, designer, like where you buy your equipment from. See, all of these work as a system, all of these technologies and so on, and making sure that a system is not too big and not too small and is meeting your needs and fits your budget and so on, these more pragmatic considerations are now, because the technology is so mature, these pragmatic considerations are more important. If it was some breakthrough technology, then it kind of wouldn't matter as much. But since everything's been done for, you know, since forever, then making things work together as a harmonious whole is actually the problem, not necessarily which new technology to get.
Can you explain what the triple bottom line is?
Oh, yeah. That's the triple bottom line is the analysis that I use, and it's pretty simple. A triple bottom line is an arrangement or a way of thinking and accounting that takes into account profits, yes, but also people, the social costs, say, and the planet, that is to say, the environmental costs. So, like with renewable energy, you end up paying more or less the full cost for energy up front. You're not doing any environmental damage. Usually the equipment is put together either in small shops or in reasonably good conditions. You know, it's not necessarily put together with slave labor because it's so high-tech usually. And so on. So you end up paying the real cost for things. Now, this contrasts your utility companies who, you know, leave big holes in the ground and kill people coal mining and cause global warming and so on, and yet manage to sell their product for almost nothing. They do it by externalizing environmental and social costs. So the triple bottom line is a way of thinking that takes into account the real cost for things, not just, you know, the cost of extraction, but the cost of the consequences of extraction as well. And it's a very successful way of thinking about things because, I mean, you end up paying these costs anyway.
And it's just a matter of when you pay them.
And it's just a matter of when you pay them, and the longer you put them off, the worse they are, and so on. That's the jolly news, is that that you can actually afford paying the full cost for things. The way you afford it is that you don't make big expensive mistakes socially, you know, as a society. If a solar panel system breaks down, maybe a little bit of hot water will trickle down your eaves troughs or something like that. It's not like you have like a meltdown or a big fire or something like that. The consequences of using renewable energy on the environment, or, you know, when it's done properly, are pretty much nil. That's the whole point, really.
Thank you. Now, when it comes to incorporating a micro hydro system for a household, do you have any recommendations?
Well, in general, I would say that if you're looking for property, this is like a bigger picture, but if you're looking for a place for a household, that you should find a place that has a good micro-hydro potential in it. Like, say you're looking at two properties, one's nice, and then the other has a little creek or spring or something like that, that micro-hydro, under the right conditions, can be the cheapest and most powerful source of renewable energy available. That's you know, in a big picture sort of way, I would say, oh yeah, listen, if you have a choice, find a place with a micro hydro potential on it, because it doesn't usually cost anymore, and it gives you the best potential for inexpensive and you know, satisfactory results.
Do you have any advice when it comes to dealing with water right issues? I know that's probably about a three-hour-long answer. But.
No, listen. Mark Twain used to said that whiskey's for drinking, water's for fighting. So water rights issues are very important. Whether microhydro is a good or bad technology in a particular situation often has a lot to do with the integrity of the regulatory scheme that surrounds it. If you believe that water management is operating in your best interests and so on, microhydro is great. The thing is, of non-consumptive use, like you just take the electricity out of the water and put it back in the stream. It's not like irrigation or something. You don't use up the water. And so, generally, as long as there's no conflicts, user conflicts, water rights officials are quite fond of microhydro, really. I've gotten lots of help from them over the years. But what they're there for is to manage conflict, because water is something that you have conflict over. See, like the wind, no one ever complains about wind, really. The sun, oh, there might be shading issues from one building to another, but no one ever complains about sun usage, usually, and so on. But water is a very contentious issue. So, yes, I have always advised clients to, you know, to fully license and cooperate with the water rights, the regulations in their area. They vary widely from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. Now, a lot of people who are my customers just hate that idea, really. You know, they're in the middle of nowhere, and they just really don't. You know, they don't want to do that, and so on. But really, because of the potential for conflict, it's always best, if possible, to get legal use of the water and so on. They're
Thank
there
you.
To prevent conflict, to manage conflict.
Well, I can appreciate the concern about having someone use your water, but you know, it's always interesting to learn about how water rights can affect different technologies. Now, my last question for you is, and I know that this might be quite a long one, but can you talk about some of the rules for surviving microhydro?
Well, I enjoyed that article.
I love this chapter.
Yeah, I love that article, too, because it's great feedback from customers to dealers. Now, but from a person who sold a lot of systems, one of the best things that I learned from that article is that they say never to underestimate your ability to overestimate your potential. Like, the kind of the problem with microhydro is it's very site specific, so you have to measure your you have to be very careful about measuring your site, potential pressure available and the flows available. You have to do a reasonable job. And yes, people have a tremendous tendency to overestimate their potential. They're excited about it and everything. So that was the that, from a person who sold a lot of systems, I found that that issue particularly illustrative. People tend to overestimate their potential. But on the other hand, a bit of efficiency can make up for a lot of mistakes in that regard, too. So,
exactly. And it's just interesting that when it comes to technology, people either don't give themselves enough credit or underestimate the people who've written the technology. And I think that's across the board with any technology.
Yes, well, see, the thing is, engineering is about money and people. It's not really about equipment. You know, it's providing human needs.
Mm.
So it's actually pretty complicated.
Thank you. Mr. Davis, it has been wonderful having you on the show today. Could you just take a moment and please give our audience your website for your organization, as well as any upcoming events that you're going to be lecturing at, and also where they can purchase your books?
Okay, well, we can. The books can be purchased through New Society Publishers, and they're on they're at newsociety all one word .com, or they can be. They can be purchased from me directly at scottldavis@shaw.ca.
Thank you so much. And do you have any upcoming workshops or events that you're going to be lecturing at?
Not in the near future.
Well, I know that the Mother Earth News Festival that you recently lectured at was absolutely amazing, and I hope to see you there next year.
Oh yes, I always enjoy that the Mother Earth News Fairs. They're very uplifting, and there's lots of interesting stuff there. I always have a really great time.
Yes, indeed, Mr. Davis. Thank you once again for coming on the show. It has been wonderful having you.
Oh, it's been nice to do this.
And folks, thank you so much for tuning in. Please check out Mr. Scott's book, Serious Microhydro. It's a wonderful book that is just chock filled with all sorts of information. It truly is an anthology when it comes to microhydro. Folks, thank you for tuning in. This has been June Stoyer with the Clean Energy View Radio Show. Have a wonderful afternoon.